Let's pray together. Lord, here we stand with arms open wide. Because your arms were opened wide on the cross to receive our sin and pay for it. Because your arms were open wide on the cross to welcome us into your heart and into your home. We stand now with arms open wide to receive all that you have to show us, to teach us, to ask of us through your word. And we stand with arms open wide to share what we have learned from you and received from you with a hurting, broken, and needy world. In your name, Lord, amen. Well, welcome to the great 2018 holiday Christmas shopping spree. Everybody having fun yet? So how many of you shopped either online or in a store on Good Friday or Cyber Monday or that weekend? How many of you participated? Well, some of you, yeah. About 165 million Americans shopped online on Good Friday, Cyber Monday weekend and spent an estimated $70 billion, which is up 17% from last year. And the fun is just beginning. Because between now and Christmas, millions of us will spend time circling parking lots, looking for parking spaces that don't exist, stand in lines in stores, wasting time we don't have, so that we can buy gifts with money that we don't have, to give to people that we don't even like. It's the time of year where everything gets just a little bit crazy, doesn't it? I mean, our schedules are hectic, our finances are tight, and all of this family together since time can cause a certain amount of friction. So before the madness begins, let's back up a half a step and look at how to get the most out of our holiday giving. And how to get the most out of holiday giving is to recognize and practice the joy of generosity. I invite you to follow along in your handout this morning as we look at the joy of generosity. And the first step to get the most out of your holiday giving is to exchange wrong Christmas expectations. You see, in the week after Christmas, about $50 billion worth of gifts will be returned or exchanged. So let's get ahead of the exchange and exchange our wrong attitudes, our wrong expectations that rob us of joy in the Christmas season. And there's three wrong attitudes to exchange this year. The first wrong attitude is more stuff won't make me content. More stuff won't make me content. Father was talking to his son. He was saying, son, you know, money can't give you happiness. And the son said, I know money can't give me happiness, Dad. That's why you have to convert money into toys. Toys give happiness. And we say we don't believe that, but then we act like we do. Because we act like if only I had the latest iPhone, if only I had an updated computer, if only I had a better wardrobe, if only I could afford that cruise, if only something, well, I might not be happy, but I would be happier. And so we stockpile the stuff in pursuit of the American dream of life, liberty, and the purchase of happiness. Except it's just not true. It doesn't work. God says in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10, those who love money will never have enough. How meaningless to think that wealth brings true happiness. How meaningless to think that wealth can bring happiness. The desire to acquire is never satisfied. The more you have, the more you want. Because stuff can't bring satisfaction. That's not the way we're made. And riches don't make your life richer. If riches made our life more satisfied and content, America would be the most satisfied nation in the world, wouldn't we? Just look at this next slide. America has 2.5% of the world's population and 40% of the world's wealth. Now, just the other day, during this discussion of the trade war and the tariffs with China, somebody said, make America rich again. What? We have 40% of the world's wealth and we have to make America rich. Somebody's going to have to explain that one to me, please. Now, studies have been done that have shown that in America, as America has gotten wealthier, our level of satisfaction and contentment has not gone up, it's actually gone down. And 2 years ago, there was a very specific study that identified a level of income and said above that income, it does not increase your happiness. You, above that level of income, your happiness actually goes down because the stress and the pressure goes up. Having more stuff doesn't make me content. Many of you will remember TV commentator Andy Rooney. Yeah? Remember him on 60 Minutes? I think we got a picture of him up there. And Andy Rooney once said, having a lot of money isn't near as much fun as I thought it would be when I didn't have any money. Money, more money won't make me more content. The second wrong belief is that more money won't make me secure. More money won't make me secure. You know, Gallup did a poll a few years ago and asked Americans why they wanted more money. 3 out of 4 Americans said, well, for us, money is security. It's protection. But God says that's not the way it works. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 5. In the blink of an eye, wealth disappears. For it will sprout wings and fly away like an eagle. It'll sprout wings and fly away like an eagle. Have any of you ever seriously looked at a dollar bill? There's an eagle. It has wings on it. God knew what he was talking about. Our money just flies away, doesn't it? And it can fly away and it disappear in a lot of different ways. I mean, it can be a medical catastrophe that wipes you out. It can be a lawsuit. It might be a natural disaster like those forest fires or floods or hurricanes that we keep hearing about. It could be a bad investment. It could be the next economic recession or depression. There are lots of ways that our money can disappear. You can't base your security on something you can lose, and the fact is we can lose our money. But even if you couldn't lose your money, it still can't make you secure. This next picture is of Donald Savastano. Now, that's a picture of Donald Savastano receiving a check for $1 million from the New York Lottery. And when he was asked by the reporters what he was going to do with the money, he said, that's not hard to answer at all. I mean, I'm a self-employed carpenter. I don't have a retirement plan. I am going to pay off some of my debts. I'm going to buy a new truck. And I'm going to make some investments to build up enough money so that I can retire. Sounds like a good plan for security. Only a few days after this picture was taken, he visited the doctor for a persistent cough and a sense of fatigue and was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. A month after this picture was taken, he was dead. Money can't bring you security. Nothing you can lose can bring you security. Well, the third wrong expectation for us to exchange this Christmas is more debt won't make me merry. More debt won't make me merry. In America, we have 3 classes of citizens, the haves, the have-nots, and the have-not-paid for what they have. And after this Christmas, about 60% of Americans will be in the have-not-paid for what they have category, and about half of those people, in other words, about 30% of Americans, will be struggling to pay off our Christmas credit card bill in time to pay our taxes. Where did we get the idea that running up more debt would somehow make Christmas more merry? God says in Romans chapter 13, verse 8, owe nothing to anyone. Message paraphrase says, don't run up debts. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 21 and 22, God says, fools spend whatever they get. A borrower is slave to a lender. God says that controlling your expenses and staying out of debt is an IQ test because you've got to be foolish to spend money that you don't have and go into debt. because it just makes you a slave to the lender, a slave to the credit card company, a slave to the banker. Do you really want to spend several months next year working hard just to pay off money that you've already spent? My wife and I had an agreement when we first got married that we would never spend more in a month than we could pay on a credit card. We'd never charge on a credit card something we couldn't pay back that month. Why? Because we didn't want to get killed by the interest rates. And in 50 years, with God's help, I can tell you we've never paid a penny in credit card interest rates. Because more debt doesn't make you more merry, it makes you more miserable. So there are three expectations to exchange before you head into the Christmas season. More stuff won't make me content, more money won't make me secure, and more debt won't make me merry. Those suck the joy out of Christmas. So instead of that, let's unwrap the gifts of generosity. The greatest gifts are not the ones you get. The greatest gifts are what you get from giving. And God tells us when we give, when we practice generosity, we give ourselves six incredible gifts in return. And anyone can experience those gifts this Christmas. The first gift is that generosity pleases God. Generosity pleases God. God, have you ever asked yourself how to please God? Well, the answer in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 16, share what you have with those in need. For such sacrifices are very pleasing to God. If you want to please God, give generously to people in need, through the soup kitchen or through Helping Hands or through other ways. But that's not all, because the Apostle Paul writes a letter to a church that supported him in his ministry, and he says to the people in Philippi, the gifts that you sent me are a sweet-smelling sacrifice that pleases God. If you want to please God, then give to people in need and give to people who are doing God's work. Give generously. Now, how important do you think that this generosity thing is to God? It's pretty important. The word believe occurs 300 times in the Bible. The word prayer occurs 400 times. The word love occurs 700 times. The word giving occurs about 2,200 times in the Bible. This giving, this generosity, is a big deal with God. And it's a big deal with God because God is a generous God. Everything you have, God gave to you, didn't he? I mean, stop and think of it. He gave you your life. He gave you your opportunities. He gave you your health. He gave you your innate abilities. Everything you have, God has generously given to you, and he asks you to pass that generosity on and share what he's generously given to you with other people, with God's people, and with people doing God's work. God says, in a world where everyone else lives to get, God says his people should live to give. That's one of the things that should make us different. In a world where everyone else lives to get, we live to give. Generosity pleases God. But that's not all, because the second gift that you give yourself is that generosity makes me more like God. It makes me more like God. Listen to this, Psalm 37:21. The godly are generous givers. 2 Corinthians 9:9. Godly people give generously to the poor. Want to be more godly? Then be more generous. Why? Because that's who God is. That's his character. God is a generous God. That's the stuff he's made of. That's his attribute. We are never more like God than when we are giving. A person can go to church every Sunday. They can memorize all the Bible verses. They can know the right doctrines. But if we are not becoming more generous, we're not becoming more like God, because God is generous, and he tells us that godly people are generous. If we think we are godly and we are not generous with God's people and God's work, then we are only fooling ourselves. But when we are generous, we are more like Jesus. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9. You know how full of love and kindness Christ was. Though he was very rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that by his poverty he could make you rich. Jesus gave up his heavenly riches, he gave up everything and became poor so that he could make us spiritually rich. And he asks us to follow his example and to give generously and to give sacrificially to help others and to help his kingdom. The more you give generously, the more you are like God the Father and the more you are like Jesus Christ. Generosity not only pleases God, it makes me more like God. Now, I need to confess something to you here. For my first 15 years as a pastor, I never taught about generosity. I never taught about money or stewardship because I didn't want people to think I was after their money. You know, well, give to the church because then it pays my salary. You know, give to the church because then I have money to do the fun things with. And there came the Sunday when I had to stand up and apologize to my congregation and say, I have failed you. Because giving is a critical part of discipleship. And giving not only pleases God, giving makes us more like God. And by not teaching you on all the wonderful benefits of giving, I have failed you in the discipleship and in the joy that you could get from it. Because what I learned, and if you don't remember anything else, remember this today. What I learned is that giving is not God's way of raising money. Giving is God's way of raising children to be like him. It's not God's way of raising money. It's his way of raising us to be more like our Heavenly Father and more like our Lord in heaven. Giving generously pleases God. It makes us more like God. But there's a third important payback. There's a third important reward to generosity, and that's generosity increases my joy. Seriously, generosity increases your joy. 1 Chronicles 29:9 refers to our topic last week when David and his son Solomon were raising money to build the temple in Jerusalem. And we're told the people rejoiced, for they had given freely and wholeheartedly to the Lord. Why were they so joyful about giving all of their money to the Lord? Because they learned that money can't buy happiness. But money can buy joy when you spend it on the Lord and on the Lord's work. There's a relationship between joy and generosity. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 2. Paul is describing the people in the church in Macedonia, and he says they are very poor. Do you get it? They're very poor. But they are also filled with abundant joy, which is overflowed in rich generosity. There's a connection between joy and generosity. Now, I'm not sure that every happy person is a generous person, but I've never seen a generous person that wasn't a joyful person. So much so that one of Wall Street's greatest money managers, John Templeton, became from humble origins, became the founder and CEO of Templeton Funds. He managed over $80 billion in assets for over 800,000 clients. He's a legend in the field and also a man with a sterling reputation. He opened all of his directors' meetings with prayer, and he encouraged all of his clients to tithe. And when he was asked why he encouraged all of his clients to tithe, he said, and I quote, "In all my lifetime of helping thousands of people, almost every person I've known who tithed for as long as 10 years has experienced greater happiness than those who did not." Tithing is simply an outward expression of spiritual growth, and spiritual growth brings happiness. So you have one of Wall Street's greatest money managers saying money's not the way to happiness. Giving is, and giving and tithing to God is. Stop and think about it. You know the word miserable? The root of the word miserable is the word miser. Right. Misers are the most miserable people because they are hoarding. The happiest people are the most generous people. Who said that? Jesus said that. Acts chapter 20, verse 35. Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. Jesus said the way to be blessed, to be happy, to have more joy is by giving, not getting. So if you want more joy in your life, stop stockpiling and start sharing. Stop hoarding and start helping. One of the other great business gurus of the last 30 years, Ken Blanchard, has written in his book, The Generosity Factor, there is a route to genuine and enduring satisfaction. It's called generosity. And it involves freely giving our time, talent, treasure, and touch, and receiving unimaginable riches in return. So line up your actions with the generous heart of God and discover a wealth that continues to flourish the more you give to others, creating an impact far beyond anything that you can imagine. Some of the most successful business leaders and money managers in society today will tell you happiness and joy comes from giving, not getting. It comes from tithing. It comes from the Lord. Generosity pleases God. Generosity makes me more like God. Generosity increases my joy. And number four, generosity decreases my greed. It decreases my greed. Wouldn't you agree Americans are consumed by consumerism? We are manipulated by materialism. We are driven by the desire to acquire. Generosity does not come naturally. Greed does. More for me does. If you don't believe that, just watch 2 3-year-olds fighting over the same Christmas toy. Right? Or 2 30-year-olds fighting over the same parking spot. If we're going to be generous, we need to learn to be generous because we need to decrease the greed in my life. How do we decrease the greed? We increase the generosity. Generosity counteracts the greed that seeps into our soul. Generosity forces us to hold loosely to things, the stuff and the money in our life, so we can share it and we can give it away. Generosity rearranges our priorities from trying to stockpile treasures on earth to stockpiling treasures in heaven. Who said that? Jesus did. Matthew chapter 6, Jesus said, don't store up treasures here on earth. Store your treasures in heaven. And wherever your treasure is, there your heart and thoughts will also be. Jesus knew that our hearts follow our investments. When you invest in the Wall Street, you'll want to check the Dow pretty regularly, right? When you invest in a corporation, you want to know what their financial health is, what their new product development is, what their marketing campaign is. Whatever you invest in, you care about that thing. Your money follows your investment. And if all of your investments are to enrich yourself, then your heart is really all about yourself. But the opposite is true, because when you invest in an orphanage, like the Cottos and the Fusers have in Global Fingerprints, you want to find out how the kids are doing and how you can help. And when you invest in a missionary, you want to keep in touch with them. You want to know how they're doing. You want to know what you can do to help. Maybe you want to go visit them. When you invest in the Lord's work, it draws your heart closer to the Lord. Sometimes people will say to me, Dick, you know, I serve the church, I go to church, I have devotions. I'm just not feeling very close to God. And I usually say, how's your level of generosity? Try giving more. Try giving extravagantly. Try giving sacrificially, because Jesus said if you want to be closer to God, send your money ahead and your heart will follow. And it just makes sense, doesn't it? Giving generously pleases God. It makes us more like God. It draws us closer to God. And the closer we are to God, the less room there is in our heart for greed. It decreases our greed. The fifth gift you give yourself is the generosity proves my character. Wouldn't you say we need to work on our character and our society needs to be more concerned with character today? You see, we can fool people about our character. We can fake sincerity. We can even fake honesty for a certain period of time. But you can't fake generosity. Either you are giving generously or you're not giving generously. You can't fake generosity. So generosity proves your character, and it proves the character in two ways. First, God says generosity proves your loyalty to the Lord. It proves your loyalty because your loyalty to the Lord will cause you to budget a tenth or a tithe of your income. The question is, how can I please God? How can I show my loyalty to Him? And God answers in Leviticus chapter 27, a tenth of the produce, and a tenth is a tithe, a tenth of the produce belongs to the Lord. Even before God gave us the Ten Commandments, He asked us to give Him 10%. This must be pretty important, this 10%, because it predates the Ten Commandments. So why is us giving God at least a tenth of our income important? Well, God tells us in Deuteronomy chapter 14, make an offering of 10%. In this way, you will learn to live in deep reverence before God, your God. God says that giving Him 10% off the top, a 10% of your income, teaches you to revere Him and to worship Him. Giving Him 10% reminds you to give Him top priority and keep top place in your life. Because tithing says, God, You're the most important thing in my life, and I'm going to put my money where my mouth is because You're getting the top 10% before anyone else gets it. Next, God measures our loyalty by what we share, not by what we say, but by what we actually share. Talk is cheap. Giving is expensive. And generosity proves loyalty. Wouldn't you agree that, you would tip a waiter or waitress 15 or 20%, right? Why does God deserve less than a waiter or waitress does? Why does He deserve a lower percentage than that? Giving God the 10% is obedience to Him, and that shows your loyalty to Him. Now, I know some of you now are thinking, but Dick, I don't make enough money to give God 10% of what I make. Now, I'm not going to tell you what to do, because that's between you and God. But God's principles apply regardless of how much money you make. And I can tell you I've applied it in my life. I have ties to God even when I didn't have money. When I was a college student and I worked my way through college, I tithed to the Lord even when I couldn't pay my next semester's tuition bill. And I trusted God to meet my needs. When I was in seminary and had three children and was spraying fertilizer on people's lawns to try and get enough money to feed my kids, my wife and I tithed, and we trusted God to meet our needs. And when we planted a church and we were investing more in the church than the church could afford to pay us, and we qualified for federal assistance, we tithed and we trusted God to meet our needs. You know, tithing proves our loyalty because it's doing what God asked us to do. And it shows our reverence for Him. You know, some people will say, but Dick, a tithe is an Old Testament concept. Well, it's right. It began in the Old Testament. The question is, did Jesus ever rescind it in the New Testament? And the answer is no. Because one day Jesus was arguing with the Pharisees. And in His argument with the Pharisees, in Matthew chapter 23, verse 23, Jesus said, you should tithe. Yes. Jesus said, keep on giving the first 10% of your income if you want to show your loyalty to the Lord. It was back in the late 19th century, missionaries in China were moving from the coast inland to spread the gospel, and they came on a community, and in this particular community that they were trying to minister to, the main crop was potatoes. Only the people were starving because the potatoes were so small, they were like the size of golf balls. And the missionaries couldn't understand it because the climate was right, the soil was right, and they said, what's the matter? And the people said, oh, potatoes just don't grow well here. Have you ever seen a big potato? Oh, yes, every once in a while we have a big potato. Well, what do you do with it? Well, we eat it because that's the best potato. So they were eating the big potatoes and they were planting the runts, which was creating a harvest of runt potatoes. Do you get the point? God says, give me the first and the best, and you will get the best harvest. But when you keep the best for yourself and give me the least and the leftovers and plant the runts, you won't get the harvest of joy or godliness that you wanted. If you are not giving the Lord a tithe or 10%, if you're something below that, could I encourage you to go home this afternoon and pray and talk to the Lord about it and set up a plan to slowly, gradually increase to get up to that point? Generosity. A tithe proves your loyalty, but you can go beyond loyalty, can't you? You can go to love, and love demands more. Loyalty says budget a tithe. Love says beat a tithe. Love says beat a tenth. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 8. This gracious ministry of giving is one way to prove your love is real. Generosity proves our love because love gives. I mean, that's what love does. Love gives, right? You can give without loving, but you cannot love and not be giving. Because love gives. And who you give to shows who you love. And how much you give shows how much you love. It's just a rule of life. You know, I bought my wife's engagement ring when I was in college, working my way through college. And I was working at a Christian summer camp. And I was making $30 a week. And I had to make a weekly payment on that engagement ring of $25 out of my $30 income. That left me $5 a week for everything, for doing my laundry, for transportation, for food, for everything. Now, do you think I was bummed about that? I wasn't. I was excited. I was in love. I wanted her to have the best, and I would sacrifice anything to show my wife, my future wife, my fiance, how much I loved her by giving her the best, because that's what love does. Love gives extravagantly. Love gives generously. Love gives sacrificially. Generosity proves our love. You know, Christians prove who we love by what we do with what we have. Have you ever thought of that? If God is your accountant, and God goes through how you use and invest and spend your money, would he say, you prove that you love God by what you do with what you have? Love gives. Love beats a tenth. The question is, how can we show God we love him for all the wonderful things he has done for us? And the answer is in Proverbs 3:9. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything you produce. Don't give the Lord the last, the least, and leftovers, and the spare time and the spare change. Give him the first and give him the best. Say, God, you deserve the best. I will give you the best, and I will live on the rest. That's not a bad life motto. I'll give God the best, and I will live on the rest. I think I've told you this story before. Rob McEwen took his teenage son out to McDonald's after a baseball game. And he bought them both burgers and drinks, but he only brought fries for his son because he was trying to lose weight. Well, they sat there talking, enjoying it, and munching away, and Bob absentmindedly reached over and grabbed a couple of fries from his son. And his son goes, "Hey, those are my fries." Bob says, "I realized right then there was three lessons my son needed to learn. Number one, those weren't his fries. I bought them. Nothing you have belongs to you. God bought it and gave it to you. Number two, my son didn't realize I'm bigger than him and I can take those fries anytime I want. And number three, I don't need his fries. I need him to love me enough to want to share the fries." Right? Generosity proves your loyalty to God. It proves your love to God. Well, the sixth gift that you give yourselves. Generosity earns a never-ending reward. A never-ending reward. Paul wrote the church in Philippi who had given him money to support his ministry. And he said, "Every time I think of you, I give thanks to God because you have been my partners in spreading the good news." Paul says, when you gave financial support to my ministry, you became my ministry partners. And I may be doing the preaching, but when someone gives their life to Jesus Christ, you share in the victory. When someone is baptized, you share in the victory. When someone grows and sheds some addictions and becomes more godly, you share in the victory because you are my ministry partners. Thanks for your generosity. And gang, the same is true. Whenever you or I invest in a church, in a missionary, or in a Christian organization, we become partners in their ministry. And when you give to Elgin Evangelical Free Church, you become partners in this ministry. You become partners in producing the kind of worship services that we're going to be doing on the 16th, the 24th, and the 23rd, where I'm expecting to see lots of visitors here. And we get to touch their lives with the good news and the healing power and forgiveness of Jesus Christ. When you give to Elgin Evangelical Free Church, you become partners in the student ministry that regularly impacts 25 teenagers. You become partners in the children's ministry. You become partners in Awana that affects about 100 kids. You become partners in Grief Share and in Stephen's ministry that help people in difficult times in their life. You become partners in Helping Hands and Soup Kitchen and in our missionaries around the world. Do you get the point? Wow, you become partners in the greatest work in the world. The work that brings hope and help and healing to broken hearts and broken lives. And you become partners in a work that changes people's eternal destiny. And what better payback can there be than that? Now that's why my wife Nancy and I are excited to partner with you in Momentum, Elgin E. Free's year-end giving program. There's a handout inside your bulletin today about it. Momentum is pursuing God's plan through God's man. And any money given over and above your tithe between now and the end of the year will be used to fund our future, to welcome our new pastor by paying his moving expenses, and by giving him the funds to start to initiate new programs and new initiatives to actively pursue our mission to touch and transform our communities by the power of Jesus Christ through lives of full devotion. You can read more details in the handout inside your program this morning. It was announced last week, and on the drive home from here last week, Nance and I talked about it and said, well, what do we think God wants us to do? And we prayed about that and discussed about that for a few days. And we have decided we're going to double our tithe for the month of December. We're going to give one tithe just to the budget, and we're going to give an equal amount of second tithe to the Momentum program. Now, I'm not even going to be here, guys. I'm not going to be here when this guy hits the ground and sees it. Why would I be doing this? It's because I believe in the future of Elgin Evangelical Free Church. I believe in the good things that God is preparing you to do here in the months ahead, and I want to be a partner in that. I want to keep in touch with what's going on. I want you to invite me back next Christmas, a year from now, to celebrate with you with the new pastor and with the transforming things that God is doing as you're pursuing your mission with him. I want to be your partner. So we are joining with you in that. I hope that you will talk to the Lord and pray and consider if God would have you be part of this. And if you want to, there's a envelope inside your program. It says Momentum on it. Anything you'd like to go to the Momentum program, just make sure it gets in the envelope and we'll get it to the right fund. Or if you're doing a check, I suppose you can write your Momentum on the check, but we may or may not see that, you know. I'm excited about what God's going to do through Momentum, and I hope you are as well. Because it gives us an opportunity to be partners in earning this never-ending reward. Two more verses to close off. This is Jesus speaking. Matthew chapter 19, verse 21. Jesus said, "Give your money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven." Luke 16:9, "I tell you, use your worldly riches to benefit others and make friends. In this way, your generosity stores up a reward for you in heaven." God says when you are generous, you get a reward. It is recorded and rewarded. But there is no return on investment if you don't make the investment. There's no payback if you don't pay out. But when we are generous with the Lord and the Lord's work, we reap the rewards. Many of you have probably read books or seen movies by the best-selling author Stephen King. He's not a Christian, okay? Let's be real clear about that. As far as I know, he's not a born-again believer. In 2001, he gave a commencement address at Vassar College. And he explained that 2 years earlier, he had been walking down the country road near his house when he was hit by a speeding van that left him lying in the ditch with broken bones and a great deal of pain. And he said, "You know, I had a MasterCard in my pocket, but when you're lying in a ditch, bloody and battered, with glass in your hair, nobody takes MasterCard." And then he alluded to the biblical text, and he said, "We come into this world naked and broke. And when we leave, we're usually well-dressed, but we're just as broke." And then he gave this challenge to the Vassar graduates. "Of all the power most Americans have, the greatest is undoubtedly the power of compassion, the ability to give. We have enormous resources in this country, but they are only yours on loan, only yours to give for a short time. Now, I want you to consider making your lives one long gift to others, and why not? All you have is on loan anyway. All you want to get at the getting place, from the Maserati you may dream about to the retirement fund some broker may try and sell you, none of that is real. All that lasts is what you pass on. The rest is smoke and mirrors." And he got it perfectly. He gets it. We come into the world naked and broke. We will go out naked and broke. The only things that we have is ours on loan to pass on and to use for others. Friends, investing in God's work is the only safe investment for eternity. Use your temporary riches to earn an eternal reward. Use your affluence to influence people for all of eternity. You've heard the phrase that we live temporarily by what we make, but we live forever through what we give. And that is true. That is biblical. So why would you want to settle for mere money when you can have true riches? And when you practice generosity, one day you get to heaven. Somebody may walk up to you that you've never met. You don't know who they are. But they'll say, "You know, I just wanted to thank you Because that church you supported, that missionary supported, that orphanage you supported, that Christian organization you supported, they stepped into my life and met my need and they taught me about Jesus. And I'm here because you cared enough to give. And that's when you'll realize what part of your reward is. Will you bow with me in prayer? Lord, I'm very aware this morning that there's some people here who are not feeling good about this message because they're saying, Dick, I just don't have that much to give. And I hope you will comfort them and say, it's not about the amount, it's about your attitude. It's just about your attitude. And when your attitude is right, and when you are giving generously, the amount warms my heart and blesses me. There are others that may be feeling badly because they realize they have been skimping. They've been using excuses to avoid giving a tithe. And I pray that you would free them up from feeling badly and just get them to ask, Lord, what do you want me to do now? How can I start to move in the right direction? Lord, and there's others that say, I have so much. And you reply and say, to whom much is given, much is required. I pray every single man and woman and teenager here today would stand before you with arms wide open and say, what, Lord, would you have me to do? What would you have me to give? How can I honor and glorify you, show my love for you, show my loyalty to you? How can I please you and become more like you? How can you use me to build your kingdom and to earn an eternal reward? And that having heard from you, they would practice the generosity that gives them the joy of the Christmas season. We ask this in your name. Amen.